This is Audible.
Audible Studios presents Udo the Digger, Worldship, Book 1. Written by Joshua Gayo, performed by R.C. Bray.
Chapter 1. The Digger. 3 or 4 days later, I had to go back to the mountain. I remember being annoyed at the time. That much is still clear. It's now hard to imagine such a simple thing annoying me, especially now. I had it easy back then. Back then, life was only as difficult as earning enough money to keep myself drunk and enjoy the occasional lay. I can't say for sure if I was happier, but I had it easy. And there sure is something to be said for easy. Even harder can be easier if it's the right kind of hard. Something hard in the right way that requires little thought and lets you close out the day too damn tired to think or move. That's the right kind of hard. Hypatia says this is because I was getting to sleep with a clear conscience, which I guess might be worth something, but then I was a digger, and that's about as low as you get. About as low as the rubbish man, or the cloaker, or the headsman, except it pays less and it's one of the few legitimate professions I know of that'll get you exiled if you run foul. So maybe Erpicia doesn't know so much as she pretends. It's her that's been prodding me, I guess a few months now, to write this damned mess. And God's love, I only learned to read and write a little while ago, and now I'm expected to sit down and write every little thing. It's as much a pain in the balls as being kicked in the actual balls. But I don't think I'll write every little thing, no matter what Erpicia says, goddess or not. Let her fire a blast of lightning up my ass, I don't care. Some things just don't need to be discussed. I lived out on the edge of a village so small they didn't bother to give it a name. And everything made good sense. Erda's heart, Sunna, was to the south, always. Arnsberg Forest was to our east. In fact, our village was nestled at the hem of her skirt. To the north, the great mountain Iris, either Erda's anus or throat. Take your pick, I guess. And the banks of the Ruhr on our west end. Everything where it was supposed to be, where we knew it should be. And we all tumbled together in the belly of Erda. I liked living in that little village. It was easy as anything else, as easy as I like to keep everything in my life. I'd done large cities before, and let me tell you, large cities are shit. There's nothing that smells of filth so much as a city. So many people packed into one place, the rubbish men can't keep up with it. Part of the taxes you pay in a city are supposed to go toward taking away the filth. And I guess everyone has just agreed to act as though the system works. They leave their jars out on the stoops, crammed with the offal of their meals and the shit of the meal's aftermath. And it seems to me it never mattered how much wax they used to seal up the lid, that fucking smell still got out. The jars break all the time, too, and they only go so far as throwing water at the mess to clean it away. It's a big problem in the cities. And I guess the problem seems so big that nobody there takes it serious enough to stay on top of it, or to even try. I suppose I don't blame them. I ask you, if it was your job to contain a raging forest fire and all they gave you was a spade and a cup of water, what would be your first step? So, I understand why the cities always smell like shit, but I sure don't have to accept it. A small place, though, like my old village used to be, that's different. I think out in a small village you can still live the way Godin intended. Or on, I guess. I'm still working that through, but set that aside. In a small village, you live the way I think people probably should live. You're not so large a group that you outrun the land. The land keeps up with you and can absorb your worst aspects. Taking the night jars away is a job the rubbish men can handle in the village. He can stay on top of it. Then, too, the pit he puts them in doesn't need to be very deep, so there's less anger from the people who live there. That's a good thing. When you're a digger, or when you engage in any profession that requires you to dig, it's good to keep the people happy. A large group of people, even when that large group is as small as what you get in a village, turns about as ugly as a boar with a spear rammed up its ass a lot quicker than you'd think, so keeping them happy is wise policy. Having been a digger myself back in those days, I have a lot of sympathy for the rubbish men. I have to imagine it's much the same in the other worlds as it is in Erda. It was the same in Talam with Riza's people. But Irpicia says it's good to explain anyway. I asked her why, and she would only say that not all worlds are shaped the same. Whatever that means, by hell. She is a goddess, though, and I guess I love her if I'm being honest, the way I'm told you're supposed to love your mother, though I'm not really sure what that's like. So be it. It makes her happy. So I'll explain the things that shouldn't need explaining. You want to avoid digging too deep. Digging too deep brings the Dwergas surging up through the cracks of Erda like some kind of hell flood. When we were children, they told us the Dwergas had their great forge deep in the skin of Erda, along with their hoard of riches. Gold, silver, lakes of molten iron, the finest steel in all creation. And the Dwergas were jealous of their wealth. If you trespassed into their domain, they felt you coming. Or maybe they smelled a change in the soil. Or maybe it's meant to be all rock down where they are. Whatever it is, they know when you're coming, and if you come too far, they rise up to meet you. And this is a terrible, terrible thing. The Dwergas do not love mankind. And they scared me stupid when I was a child. Then I grew older, got enough spirits in my belly that I thought I feared nothing at all. It was a delusion, yes, but it was a good delusion to have. It was wonderful to believe you were fearless. It's a wonderful thing to look back on those monsters that frightened you in your childhood, those monsters you hid from, and say they can do you no further harm and know it to be true. It is especially good if, growing to adulthood, you realize those monsters were never there, as I soon realized the Dwergas were never there. I drank enough to understand they were an invention. They were stories created by those in charge for the purpose of making certain people out to be less than others, the diggers and the rubbish men and the like. I didn't understand why they'd want to lower certain people and elevate others. Not at first, but then after a while, I realized that some people must always be higher than others, as is the natural order of things. So you might as well put the poor at the bottom. Drink enough and everything makes sense eventually. Keep the poor poor. How? Make a story about the Dwergas and say that anyone who delves too far into the soil will bring them. You make the people who have to root in the ground the distrusted, the outcast, and then everything stays locked in place right where you want it. The more I drank, the more I realized that storytellers are manipulative cunts, and they could get dog-fucked for all of me. But then there came the time I saw a Dwergas, and it was every bit as horrible as they said it would be. So that theory never stuck. It is wonderful to disbelieve the monsters of your youth, but sometimes they will not be disbelieved. Finally, if they will not be disbelieved, it is wonderful to kill them. If you can. Well, I just went over the last few pages I wrote, and it seems to jump around somewhat. I showed it to a few of the others, and they agreed. Then they gave me all kinds of advice on how I should be writing this and how I should clean it up, and one says I should use more polite language, while the other says the raw language is true. Advice from every direction, and it all seems to disagree on the proper way to be about the business of writing. And so, I've learned my first important lesson. Don't show your stuff around, for one, and don't pay too much attention to what they're saying, for another. Everyone has some idea on how you should be writing your own thing, it turns out. I find it confusing. I find it confusing they're not putting all that knowledge into writing their own thing, but what do I know? I'm just a digger. I was a digger. Irpicia suggests the reasonable place to start is when I discovered Risa. But that doesn't seem correct. If in the writing of this I'm to assume the reader doesn't even know about the Dwergas, it seems I'd better explain some other things before I get too far along. So, let me go back to those days and think about how it was and find a beginning that works. I lived on the edge of the village, like I said, far enough away from the next closest structure that you couldn't see it from my house. I was just around the bend in the road, as we used to say. I'd built the place myself, using what little knowledge I'd picked up on the cobbles. And that was yet another lovely thing about villages, compared to a huge city like Colmar in the south. No landlords. You just found your plot, preferably a spot on which no one else has built, and put up some walls. And if the village accepts you, they don't knock those walls down and you're probably safe to show your face around the main square. You'd think that a man like me, a digger, would be ejected immediately, but people are funny. Prejudice is a strong force, and yet often pragmatism is stronger. The smiths, tinkers, and farriers rely on men like me for their stock, and the whole village relies on the smiths, tinkers, and farriers. All of which is to say that the whole village relies on men like me, which must have chafed their asses bloody. It's a fine line you walk, though. And while it's true they didn't run me out of town, it was also true that no one ever bought me a drink at the alehouse. The bastard sure didn't buy drinks for the smiths, tinkers, and farriers. I was not a carpenter, and my home was more than enough evidence to the point. It had four walls, a door, and a roof that did a reasonable job of keeping most of the rain out. Inside was a bed, a table, and a chair. I'd always intended to plank the floor, but once I had the roof on, it required a few tries to get it right. I guess I lost interest. It seemed less important, and if you put the bed up on a frame, as I had done, you had a chance of keeping the insects and the rats off while you slept. Outside, I'd built a little pen where I kept my cart and my ass, Ambrosius, named after Ambrosius III, who'd been a lord of the region since before I was born. If I'd had any friends, I would have referred to the ass as Ambrose in their company, given the threat of beheading for insulting a personage of nobility, but I didn't have any friends, so Ambrosius he was named. My home was rough, but then I've always been a rough man. And living in this way has always been well enough for me. It was good living in those days. I paid rent to no man and made enough money as a digger to keep myself fed, drunk, and once or twice every 6 months, screwed by a high-priced whore. A run of work is a simple thing. Certain craftsmen need metals. Iron is very good, but there is much of it, so you must collect a lot to command a good sum. Tin as well, and copper, and so forth. Gold is excellent if there is a jeweler nearby. But our little village didn't have a jeweler, so gold was usually something I would bury in the floor of my home until I had enough to make the journey south to one of the larger cities. It was next to worthless in the village. You could often find iron on the banks of Ruhr. We called it bog iron. But it was bad policy to dig on the river. The other villagers were always coming down to the bank for water, and digging is a solitary activity, much like spitting into your hand to interface with yourself is a solitary activity. We all understand these things are necessary, but you don't stand out in the town square and do the deed in plain view. They lash you for doing either in the larger cities. So when I ran out of money, I was always running out of money, being a drunk is expensive. I was forced to get up early on the morning after, before Sunna lit the sky from his throne at Erda's heart, hitch my cart up to poor Ambrosius, throw my tools in the back along with whatever food I'd managed to preserve, and make for the root of the mountains that irised around one of Erda's two orifices. I like to tell myself it was probably Erda's gullet. Going the other direction would have been too much like being a rubbish man, and those rubbish men are some dirty, lowly types. Not only must they dig, they also trade in the shit of men like myself. If that's not lower than a digger, I have no idea what is. It's about a full day's worth of walking to reach the foot of the mountain, sunlight to sundark, or in other words, a little over 4 miling. You don't really get anything done on the first day except the walking, and sometimes you're building a fire in the dark. If you're wise, you probably stop at dusk to have enough light, or you packed a lantern, but I was rarely wise. I was, however, wise enough, most times, to have a decent cask of ale packed for the trip out, and it was good to drink all day long on our walk to the mountain, me sipping down the ale at an easy pace, and Ambrosius taking a nip of water as he needed, so that when it was time to set the fire in the dark, I didn't mind the inconvenience. Drinking always made me happy, right up until it no longer could. The next morning was an early one, rising at the first light of southern sunna to make the most of the day. Ambrosius I left to keep eyes on the campsite. The poor old boy couldn't be expected to make the haul into the mountain anyway. The path became jagged pretty fast, and that cart sure didn't take its time getting heavy. So I tied him to an overhead branch on a lead long enough that he could lay down if he wanted, with plenty of grass all around and water within reach. I had a leather lash at the end of the cart's tongue. I looped it over my shoulders so that the cart was now hitched to my back, smiled a curse at Ambrosius, and made for the edge of the world. It wasn't so bad either. The cart was empty, and I didn't have to pull it very far, and coming back down was also pretty good. The cart was heavier, but then I'd be coming downhill, so it was less about hauling and more about resisting its desire to run me over. The foot of the mountains are a mixture of tough soil and rock, and the higher you get into the mountains, the rockier they get. I never went too high, though. I made that mistake once, long ago, when I first began to dig, thinking stupidly that I would find more stock as I went higher. All I found was more rock, and then higher still, I didn't like how the mountain felt. Erda seems to lose her hold on you when you climb too high, as if the great Verm can sense you trying to escape and would fling you from her throat, or intestine, I suppose, back out into the air of her body, tumbling down and down until you hit the land far below. It feels horrible up there as you get higher, as if you're gonna fall any moment, or maybe even as if you are falling, have already fallen, though both feet be planted firmly on the rock. I climbed high only the one time, and that was enough. Staying low is good. It works out the way you'd like. There's plenty of soil packed in with the rock when you're lower. Soil that starts to feel soft when you abuse it with a pick. And metals are found in soil as easily as they are in rock. I pulled my cart up the slope, far enough until the plants and so forth had been left behind. Found a nice stone to wedge behind the wheel, and spent the rest of the day rooting around in the dirt. You get lucky often enough, which is pretty good, because I haven't yet devised a way to know where the metal is before taking that first bite with the pick. I can't think of anyone else who has either. There are traveling diviners, of course, who claim the ability to nose out the good deposits through various means. I've heard of some who bang together a couple of sticks. Apparently, they can tell the direction of the vein by the sound they make. I even heard of one who used to slink around the back alleys of Gosler, who claimed she could find the metal by brewing a mixture of water and a handful of the local soil over a fire and drinking it. My feeling on the diviners has always been that it's senseless to hire them. The way I hear, they're wrong as often as they're right, and they're damned hard to find anyway. Can you imagine how low a person would have to be to serve someone as low as a digger? A metal diviner might as well be a leper, which is a comforting thought in a way. It really doesn't matter how low you get, it seems, as there's always a bottom feeder lower than you. I have found through much experience that the best way to find the boon is to apply pick to dirt. This is what I did. I churned up great patches of the stuff, patches as large as the floor space in my shack back in the village, so maybe 8 fusa in either direction, and then went back over it with a spade. You sift through the loosened soil, being very careful to look at everything that first time, because often whatever you find on that first churning is small, easy to miss. When you do find something small, it usually means there are larger clumps a little deeper. Whenever you catch the sign, you dig out all the loose soil with the spade and pile it up close by, and then go into your pit and churn it all up again with the pick. It's a good chance to find something useful on that second run, but if you don't, you can dig it out and churn it up again a third time. You never do it more than 3 times, though. More than 3, and you're begging the Dwergas to come pay you a visit. I never believed in them myself, not back then. But I wouldn't go past 3 churns. No digger would. It's the same as when you spill a little salt on the table. They say you're supposed to toss a pinch of it over your shoulder to ward the bad luck away, and most folks don't believe it because bad luck comes at the will of the gods, and if they want you to have it, there isn't anything you can toss that'll make it go elsewhere. Knowing that, though, most of us still toss a pinch, smiling a little as we do. I'll bet you do as well when you're sitting around the table in the public house with your mates. I never went beyond 3 churns for the same reason. It had nothing at all to do with the fear that formless black creatures would come up from the ground and claw at me until my insides became my outsides. With enough persistence, you eventually find a hit, and then you work the hit until it pinches. Meanwhile, your cart is filling up quite nicely. Filling up with iron or tin or copper mostly. But sometimes you might find some silver or gold in very small quantities. It all went in the cart when I found it, even the stuff that wouldn't sell in the village. There was always the semi-annual trip to the city for a good whore, and I could sell the unsellable stuff in just about any city. I stayed out there for as long as it took to fill up the cart, which was usually a few days' worth of continuous work at the spade. I quit each evening when sunna dimmed. This was the time when you knew you had about 2 hours before sun dark, and I knew I had to get back down to camp while I still had light enough to do so. I'd hurry up and smooth all the soil back into the pit I was working, because leaving an open pit is just begging for hell's attention. Throw the tools into the cart on top of my haul and head back down, resisting the cart's desire to run me over. Back at camp, I would check on Ambrosius, make sure he seemed well, that the grass was cropped, confirming he'd eaten, and that he'd had water. I'd get the fire going again, set a potato in a pot of water to boil, and then give Ambrosius a good brushing. Not because he'd worked hard or deserved it so much as he'd get pissy if I didn't and serve up a nice bite as I passed. When that was done, I'd dig a hole, put whatever metal I had down in it, and cover it over. You need to bury your haul if you're not going back that day. You never leave the stuff unattended. A digger's work is solitary work, it's true, and you take steps to ensure that this is so. But there are always parasites, like I said, and some of them like to come out and watch a digger do his work. If the digger is a fool, he'll leave his haul out in the open when he leaves to get more, and then the bastard parasite comes out of hiding, fetches up the haul, and heads off to sell it. So, as a digger, you bury the stuff, because you know those bastards lack the heart to do any digging of their own. Most people are terrified of the Dwergas. I think many diggers are too, honestly. But most of us are crazy enough or have lost enough that we don't care as much as we should. Or we get cynical and refuse to believe. But most people do believe, and strongly at that. So burying the haul is enough to confound them. You never have to protect your haul from other diggers. There are few enough of us that there's plenty of open area to mine, and one would never steal from another anyway. It's a code of honor to leave a marked haul alone, and even if we saw it sitting on a platter, polished and ready for the forge, we wouldn't even touch it if we could tell that platter was set out at a digger site. Also, the penalty for theft of a hall, one digger to another, is death. And the law turns a blind eye to this because it's just one less digger after all. Now fathom this a moment. These lowlifes, who come around stealing from diggers, aren't looked down upon by the public at large. Not if the public knows how they acquired their haul. They didn't dig to get it, so they're not filth. See? They're not exactly respected members of the community, sure, but then they're not maligned like the diggers either. They're just all right. And if I were to kill one of them for robbing me, that's a beheading coming my way, because we can't let a digger kill a decent citizen, can we? Oh no. Let a digger kill another of his kind and nobody notices, but have one of us step out of that little circle and it's off with our fucking heads. Bastards. So, you bury your haul. And it doesn't matter if they're out there in the bushes watching you as you do it because they don't have the balls to take a pic to Erda. Hey, here's another thing you need a digger for. Large cities. You want to erect a structure of real size, of real scale, maybe give it a stone base and have it climb higher than a man's shoulders? Well, you need to dig to sink a footing for it, or it'll just slide and fall over time. The way they do this is to wall the entire plot with huge sheets of canvas pulled across wooden frames, like a giant tent with no top. They do this so you can't see the diggers at their trade. And then they have you work during the night under torchlight just to ensure the respectable folk can't be injured by viewing you in the shameful act of building their thrice-damned city. I say again, bastards. After I buried the hall, I stretched out along the fire, pulled the pot away to cool, and drank. It was wonderful to drink like that, out in the wilderness, by my little fire, with Ambrosius laid over beside me, sometimes resting his muzzle on my leg and me stroking his neck, and drinking, and looking off into the sky. On a clear night, you could sometimes look straight up and see the other side of the world. Though there were no large cities so close to the poles, so there was no light to give evidence of there being anything more than the spine of Erda. Often there were clouds, though, and it was hard to see through to the other side as they turned overhead. Even if you could see through the near side of the clouds, you might not see beyond the far side, and they could pile up high sometimes when the weather was right, high and higher, until it seemed they might reach each other at the center. But you could lay there by the fire, clear night or no, with the warm muzzle of a lazy ass rested on your leg, drinking if you were lucky, and a potato waiting to be eating. Or maybe stew if you had a good run of luck, and no one else around. Maybe not for a few milin'. And it was very wonderful. Very wonderful.